My name's Becca. I'm a member of staff here. And I don't know about you and what your decoration routines are in your house. I have this friend, she's called Hayley, and she is like Mrs. Christmas. She starts putting her decorations out in, wait for it, September. Really, not the whole caboodle, but just little bits. So a candle here, a little bit of holly over there, and slowly but surely her house by Christmas has turned into this veritable grotto of Christmassiness. It's incredible. All her duvets are Christmas themed. She has a Christmas jumper for every day of the week and makes her husband wear one occasionally. She's just astonishing. The street that I live on is festooned with lights at the moment. It's lovely. It's particularly lovely at the moment because half our streetlights don't seem to be working. So it's got, you know, lighting up the evening. But I reckon a bit like Richard was saying earlier, you could almost see it from space, this multi-coloured flashing lights all night long glowing through the window. You can see it going. In our own house, we're a little bit more sedate. We have it firmly in the calendar that the first weekend of December is blocked out, ready to put up our decorations. And I love it. I love the tree and hanging the things in the right coordinated way. I love putting the twinkly lights up. I hate taking them down at the end. I love it. I love the build-up, the preparation. I love all that's everything about Christmas. But Christmas isn't always happy, is it? 22 years ago, my granny died on Christmas Eve. And she was granny who lived next door. She was this integral part of her family. She hadn't been sick. She hadn't been poorly. She just suddenly was gone. And that Christmas was the weirdest Christmas I have ever experienced. As my mum, who had just lost her mum, still got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to put the enormous turkey in the oven, who soldiered through because Christmas had to be Christmas. And we sat and we opened our presents from Granny and we read her handwritten notes. And she took great care over things like that. It wasn't just a quick note, it was a love note. And we sat and we cried and we grieved Granny. And it was a weird mixture of sadness and happiness and joy and grief. But the pressure's there, isn't it? To have this perfect Christmas. To have the best roast potatoes is always the competition in our house. Who does the best roast potatoes? Who has got the best present that was exactly what somebody wanted without you even having to ask them? You've managed to do it as a surprise. And yet all those pressures and expectations sometimes just highlight that our reality is lacking. That our reality is something different. That actually in our family, when everyone gets together, there's tension. And there's arguments. And there's walking on eggshells. That our finances that are already quite stretched, well, they've just hit breaking point in our desperate desire to be able to provide and do more than we really can afford for the people that we love. And in the news, every day at the moment, Andy talked about it earlier, every day is sad story after sad story of famine and war and conflict and persecution. You see, the lights are on in my street, but the lights aren't on in Aleppo, and the lights aren't on in South Sudan, and the lights aren't on in millions of houses all around the globe of people for whom the 25th of December, is just another day that they have to survive and try and find enough food, forget the turkey, for their kids. We live in a world where all the things that we've traditionally put our hope in have shattered. You know, we thought that democracy was the answer to how you run a nation. And yet actually in this last year and the years in the run-up, we've seen that democracy doesn't, it isn't. It isn't what we thought. It doesn't answer everything. Our hope in the United Nations, this incredible organization set up after World War II to bring peace and goodwill to all men, is toothless and powerless in the face of some of what's going on around the world. It can't fix it. And even our hope in humanity, that simplest hope of all, has been destroyed as we've seen people do unspeakable things to each other. And the world has been exposed as this place of darkness, this post-truth world, a place where it feels like there's very little hope of change. And it's easy to feel bleak, And it's easy to feel afraid of the future. And it's easy to feel like nothing could ever be any different. But the truth is that this baby born 2,000 years ago really did bring hope to the darkness. There's another carol, isn't there? The little town of Bethlehem. And it talks about the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee that night. That night, that baby revealed that God stepped in. He stepped into the darkness. He revealed that he's not just a great, big, powerful, mighty God watching over us from afar, that actually he's a great, big, powerful, mighty God, creator of the universe, but full of compassion, full of love, who loves these people in their brokenness, who loves them in their mess, and who was prepared to send his son to live in it so that God could know these people and be known by them. His son came to the darkness. And we have quite a sanitized version nowadays of the nativity story. We've polished it up a little bit and we keep it quite nice. But when we get back to what it really happened, what was really going on, we realize that this baby, the darkness he was born into, was incredibly real, right from the moment of his conception. You see, Mary had this incredible honor. When the angel came and lit up her day and said, you're going to carry the Son of God, she said, you know, people will call me blessed. But that blessing, that honor came at the most incredible cost. She had to go home and tell her family that she was pregnant. She had to go home and tell her fiancé that she was pregnant. She had to hope that someone would believe her, that someone would understand. And Joseph eventually did. And then we get to the next part of the story where the two of them go back to Bethlehem. And they do that because Caesar Augustus, who was ruler of the whole of the Roman Empire, wanted to count how many people he ruled over. And so he said they all had to go back to their hometown, to their family town. So when Joseph and Mary went back to Bethlehem, and we say that there was no room at the inn, it wasn't that they'd, you know, not booked their travelodge early enough in the season. It wasn't that they hadn't been, you know, planned and prepared. It was that actually when they'd gone back to Joseph's family town, to his family home, to where his family lived, there was no room in their houses. Not for that baby. Not for this couple. Not with their story. And even before he was born, this baby is rejected and left to be born with the animals where there's nothing and nobody. And then the story continues because we hear about these wise men who've studied the stars and they've studied the holy books and they've learned that actually there's a baby going to be born. This baby's extraordinary. He's not an ordinary baby. He's not even going to be an ordinary king. He's something special. And they travel for miles, hundreds and thousands of miles to find him. But they go via the local King Herod. And local King Herod is an insecure and power-hungry man. He's a man who doesn't want any threat to his power, thank you. And he'll rule it out, stamp it out, rule it out if he can. So when he hears this story about this baby, he sends them on his way. And when he doesn't get to find out exactly where that baby is born and where he's living now, he sends out his guards and he sends out his men and he decrees that all baby boys must die. And now this baby, born in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago, he's not just rejected, he's a refugee as he flees with his mum and dad to Egypt, a stranger in a foreign land, a place where they don't speak the same language, a place where he doesn't belong, a place where nobody knows them. Jesus stepped into our darkness in every sense of the word. You know, and this came at a great cost to Mary and Joseph, and it came at a real danger even to Jesus' life. But nevertheless, this baby brought hope, real hope, hope that has lasted and not been extinguished in 2,000 years. Hope for the shepherds on the hillside, the down and outs of Jewish society. You know, the angels came and literally lit up their night. But more than what happened that night, they got to tell the shepherds before anybody else heard that the Son of God had been born, that the Saviour of the world was here. And there was hope then that perhaps the world had shifted on its axis a little. That actually maybe the old way was gone. The old way where it was only the rich and the powerful and those born into a priestly family who got to know God. That actually now it wasn't about just those people anymore. It was about the lowly and the meek, the outcast and the refugee. Hope that maybe God could step into our darkness, into our brokenness, into our mess, and walk beside us, knowing what that feels like, knowing what that looks like, knowing us. Hope that actually God could be the light in our world. Hope that we can know and be known by God. Hope that we'll never be alone.